Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Liverpool in focus. One topic, one guest, every week.
Hello, it's John Buskell here from Stockholm in Sweden, and welcome to another episode of In Focus. It's episode 26, in case you were counting. And the guest this week on the show is Griz Khan. And Griz comes on to talk about his ultimate Premier League Liverpool 11. Now, Griz has got some great suggestions, and of course, I problematize some of his choices and come with my own suggestions. But here we go. So why Liverpool?
Liverpool FC came into my life at the age of 10, when I was 10 years old, actually. 10, 11 years old. I think I'm going to give my age away to the listeners here. But 1985 was when I started supporting Liverpool. And unfortunately, it wasn't the most happiest of occasions when Liverpool got my attention. It was actually the Heysel disaster. I remember watching on the TV and, you know, the awful events that took place. Mm. But it did catch my attention, which, you know, which so often leads to sort of you taking more interest into that event. And from then on, I just saw the love and adulation that this club gets from fans worldwide, and how, you know, even tragedies can bring this club and fans together. And yeah, so the love affair started from there.
That's really interesting. That is a very, very interesting thing, because I mean, for a 10-year-old boy to pick up on something like that, that's
I remember just as a kid just wanting to watch the final, just coming to, you know, I didn't know much about football or anything, but sort of my uncles were watching football, and I saw this, there was no football taking place, and obviously they were in, you know, deep discussion of what is happening. I didn't realize what was happening as much as them, obviously. But then, you know, from there, just I just absolutely fell in love with this club of ours.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, Griz, you've been following the club for a long time, and you've come on the show to discuss, well, to try and put together a team to tackle to tackle the Premier League, and on recent form, one might say that it would be nice to bring out some of the guys from the old days. Your task, which you have so willingly embraced, is to talk your way through the formation and some of the players. And I'm going to challenge you on them, because I've got very, very fixed ideas about who I would be playing. And I definitely think, I mean, we've had so many amazing players over the years that, as we were saying just before we hit the record, this is just one take on it, and you know, we're not intentionally leaving people out, and I'm sure we'll forget to mention somebody. But just to get a first 11, if you like, onto the In Focus show, because I haven't done this kind of topic before. So my first question to you, Griz, has to be, what is the formation? What do you think is the ideal formation?
That is the first thought that came entered my mind when thinking of this, when this subject was thrown at me. And I was thinking, well, the only way we could look at it is we haven't won the Premiership, right? So therefore, we have to think, what is the formation that has got us closest to, or nearly won us the formation, mm-hmm. or the most successful period that we've had with a certain formation? And, you know, it's tough. I mean, we could talk about the Rafa formation, the 4-2-3-1 that he played a lot, or we could talk about the Brendan Rodgers, the variation where he turned it into a 4-3-3 with a diamond. So, I mean, and another thing is we had to pick, you know, I had to decide, are we picking the best 11 players and just putting them into any old formation just as long as they're the best 11 players, or are we picking a team? And I thought we'd go for a team in that way, in terms of more of a team. So therefore, I actually went for a 4-2-3-1 system in the end. As you say, there will be players that a lot of listeners will say, oh my God, how could we leave XYZ out? But hey, that's the beauty of opinions, eh?
The beauty of podcasts. I'm really pleased with you went with the 4-2-3-1 because, well, I agree with you immediately.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It's quite interesting, isn't it, in terms of formulations that we've played over recent years. You know, everyone was so keen on the diamond. Rafa, as you rightly said there, you know, that was his preferred choice with the 4-2-3-1, but he, you know, he changed it up at times. And I think one of the strengths of his side was his ability to have a plan B. Julier was, you know, much more counter attack, and Roy Evans, I thought, did some exciting things with wing backs. I think a lot of the formation issue would also rely on what other teams are doing in the Premier League, let's say 2017. I mean, look at Chelsea way out the front playing three at the back. Do you think we could really challenge the likes of Chelsea by playing that 4-2-3-1 formation?
You mean currently with the current setup squad?
Yeah.
See, I mean, you know, it's probably not a good night to be speaking about if we can challenge the likes of Chelsea after the debacle that we've just we've seen
against Leicester. For those people
Leicester,
listening,
yes, sorry, yeah, against Leicester. Sorry, yeah, we're recording on the just after the Leicester game, so yeah, hence the mood's a bit you know, down. But I'm very pro Klopp. I don't, you know, I'm not going to start even, you know, criticizing Klopp for anything yet. But what I will do is praise Conte. So I won't criticise Klopp, but I will praise Conte. Conte has come to Chelsea and, you know, he with the players he had, and he saw that the formation he played, which was, I think they played 4-3-3 at the start of the season.
Yeah, they did.
It just didn't work. You know, his players, his ideas. You got to remember, he's very used to playing his 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, whatever way you look at it, for Italy and for Juventus. And he wasn't sure. He wanted to obviously have a look at his personnel, what kind of personnel he had to fit into that formation. But you got to take your hat off to Conte, the way he's revitalized Chelsea with that change of formation. And, you know, it's yet to be sort of overcome by the opposition. It's a he's changed the fortunes of the club. I mean, Chelsea were struggling, if we remember rightly, weren't they? They were struggling in the first 7-8 games. But as soon as he changed the formation, he had a plan. I want to see a reaction from Jurgen Klopp. We have, it seems, been found out with this formation of his, with the Firmino false nine type scenario. I don't know where we. I don't know how we challenge next. I haven't got a definitive answer.
All right, then. Okay.
If I would, you know, I'd be Jurgen Klopp's.
Yeah, you'd be the guy.
Right hand, exactly.
You'd be the guy picking up the payback. Okay, Grizz. Well, let's in search of our our 11. Who would you have as your keeper?
Well, keeper, John, the candidates that sort of sprung to mind straight away were Pepe Reina, Jerzy Dudek. I mean, how can we not? How can we forget Jerzy Dudek? Mm. You know, Champions League and final and all that. The wobbly legs. So there were the two standouts, to be honest with you. I mean, when I was going through the list, I was actually thinking the amount of goalkeepers that we've gone through is astounding. I mean, I went through a lot of goalkeepers, and you know, I was thinking we have not had a stable goalkeeper, you know, for a fair number of years. I mean, Pepe Reina, Jerzy Dudek, each lasted, what was it, about 2-3 seasons each, which is not long for a goalkeeper.
I suppose Pepe was longer. He was there from
4 or 5 seasons, was it?
Yeah, it must have been something like that. From the length of from the length of Benitez's reign, and then into after the first year, and then into Roy Hodgson.
Yeah,
it's so, Brendan, I mean, that gets rid of him.
That's right. So therefore, you know, Reina sort of stood out for me.
Although he wasn't particularly good in the last 18 months. Something did go wrong. Now, I don't know if it was the departure of the Spanish goalkeeping coach we replaced with Achterberg.
That's right. That did coincide with his loss of form, or maybe, you know, as a team we had quite a rough patch, didn't we, in that period as well.
No, I was going to say, of the two, of Dudek and Reina, I mean, let's take them at their peak, because of course both of them had uneven patches. I suppose Reina he played first team football longer than Jerzy did. He didn't suffer as many injuries as Jerzy did. On their day, though, who has the qualities, do you think, for the Premiership, for where we're at now, for what we need? You know, if you know, we're going to come under scrutiny yet again for conceding 3 goals. I'm not sure when Gags will put this out. But I mean, here we've conceded 3 goals at Leicester, and so the defence is going to come under scrutiny. Mignolet is going to come under scrutiny. What kind of keeper do we need? Well, I think we need a keeper who is calm, who is not easily ruffled, who can come for the ball, who can command his box, who is also capable of getting the play, really playing out from the back very, very quickly. And of Dudek and Pepe Reina, who you've mentioned there, who would spring to mind first for you?
Well, the attributes that you've just mentioned, named calmness, I mean, I don't think you could find anyone more cooler and calmer than Jerzy, actually. If you think about it from that aspect. But I found Pepe Reina at his best, commanding, very vocal with his back four, and he was immaculate with his feet. I mean, if you you said what kind of keeper would we need today out of the two? I think Pepe Reina fits like a glove currently. Mm. It's quite actually, it's the irony of we're still talking about keepers, you know, 10, 15 years later. You know, we still haven't fixed that problem, which is quite sad, actually. But I think Reina, out of the two, for me, was more consistent at his best. I mean, we've got to remember, we've got to pick them at their best in the Premier League. Jerzy had some brilliant, amazing games. Obviously, that Champions League stands out. But I think Reina, for me, in this current setup, with his ball-playing skills, with how loud and how he organises the back four, I think I'd choose Reina.
Yeah, Reina was a leader. I think for
a leader.
Me, yeah,
that's it.
I think that's what we lack at the moment is an aggressive, confident personality in the back. Okay, well, what about the centre backs?
The centre backs for me, it was the standout was Hupia and another. I think you'd agree Hippia stands out.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it.
As possibly captain, vice-captain even. Mm. So, you know, therefore, had to choose an able deputy alongside him. Now, the options was, what went through my head was, do I pick the best partnership? Do I pick the best player as in defender? Or do I go for... Because, I mean, a personal favourite of mine was Daniel Agger.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of ball-playing centre-half, elegant, reader of the game.
Mm.
But then what kept bugging me was, is he too similar to Hupia as well? Do I need a passer and a reader of the game next to a tenacious, more Carragher-like defender, you could say, who does the dirty work? So, I mean, Hupia stood out for me. I said Hupia would be the number one. And then I even contemplated, sort of, because I think we'll come to it later, you know, the right back situation was sort of bugging me as well. And I wanted to fit a certain Marcus Babbel into the team somewhere. And I was even contemplating playing him centre back, because that's where he played for Germany quite a bit. I know he didn't play for us a lot at centre half, but he was just so immaculate in everything he'd done. I mean, Marcus Babbel was one of my favorite defenders.
Yeah, had
in
a
world
fantastic
football.
Season. Had a fantastic
even before
season.
Even before he came to Liverpool at Bayern, I just so enjoyed watching Marcus Babbel, and I was absolutely thrilled when he came to us. So I wanted to fit Marcus Babbel into our team, but I thought that would be unfair on the likes of Agger, Carragher, you know, not many others, unfortunately, came to mind. I mean, you know, I asked some friends for suggestions, and someone even mentioned Matip. And, you know, I think it's way, way too early to even think of, you know, Matip in terms of an all-time favourite 11. So I think I went for Agger in the end, just because, you know, he's such a wonderful, wonderful defender, wonderful footballer.
Mm.
You know, he was not the quickest, yet very rarely would he be beaten by pace, which is an excellent sign of a reader of the game.
Sure, and if you're playing the kind of tactics, the kind of football that's easy on the eye that Jurgen Klopp seems to enjoy, that Benitez certainly enjoyed, the ball playing centre half. I mean, Daniel Agger was a Rolls Royce of a football player. He seemed to float, you know, 10 centimetres above the ground as he moved forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know. Jamie Carragher was not as half as talented as the two guys that I've actually gone for, but I did have a strong feeling to put Jamie Carragher alongside either of them, just for his pure passion and hunger for the club. And sometimes a team isn't made up of pretty footballers. All of, you know, you won't get 11 the most talented footballers making up a football team. Sometimes you need that, you know, dog type, the grafter, the organizer, the passionate, the loudmouth, you know. But I just thought it would be a travesty of justice if I left Agger out of the team. So that's why I opted for Daniel over Jamie.
I think Jamie Carragher is, I mean, he's a fabulous footballer. I have a huge amount of respect for what Carragher did in a red shirt. He's sort of synonymous with being, you know, a mouthy, fighting, scouser, channeling, or you know, last line of defence kind of everything. But Daniel Agger has an enormous amount of passion for Liverpool Football Club as well. And
very true.
He might not be as vocal as Carroll was, but certainly he played with absolute pride. And I thought it was so interesting when it came out last year when he talked about retirement, when he retired, and he talked about how he'd really, been on strong painkillers, and you know, had really put his body through the mixer for the red shirt, which I thought was fantastic. I think
his injuries did actually. That was the only, you know, sort of sad to see that how injuries did affect him in the latter years. As you talk about the painkillers and what we found out afterwards, you know, how much, you know, pain he actually went through to put his, you know, body on the line for us, which was quite sad.
I always found it just to put a different spanner in the works, as it were, I'd love to have seen a younger Kola Touré as a central defender at Liverpool. Because
absolutely, absolutely. Kola Touré at Arsenal for a year or two, John, for me, was one of the outstanding centre-backs of world football.
Yeah.
There is absolutely... He was part of the Invincibles, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
And that was at a time when there was some amazing forwards in this country. We had... The Premiership was lit up with a lot of European stars coming in, and there was some forward talent around.
Absolutely. And a player with absolute tenacity, with leadership skills. I mean, I think it's very interesting, isn't it? Here we've got going, and we're talking about Reina, a natural-born leader. We've got Sami Hupia, a leader in his own way. Daniel Agger, leadership qualities, captain of Denmark. Kola Touré, another leader figure. Something that the current squad could really do with is some leaders on the pitch.
John, spot on. When I was doing my draft for the team, that's the first thing that stood out. I actually thought you already mentioned it, and I thought we will discuss this at some point. The amount of leaders we've had in the past and compared to our current team, I can't, you know, think of a natural leader in our current team, which is an absolute travesty. But yeah, when we actually finish the team, we will see how many natural leaders we have through the whole spine of the team, which is what is needed. You know, you need a team of winners, leaders.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, they have to pull together. Now, you already mentioned Marcus Babbel. Is Marcus Babbel your choice for right back?
Marcus Babbel, the only two standouts for me. Well, there was three, to be honest with you. Steve Finlan was very, very reliable, very immaculate, very... every team needs a Steve Finnan. He was very underrated and I had a lot of time for Steve Finnan. And, you know, another player that I did really rate from his Fulham days, and I was actually quite happy that we actually bought him. But the main two candidates were for me for that right-back position was Rob Jones and Marcus Babbel. Rob Jones, for me, was one of the most naturally gifted fullbacks I've seen. I actually clearly remember his debut. I think we bought him just 48 hours before the game at Old Trafford, and he was thrust into the lineup straight away up against the legend, we hate to say it, that is Ryan Giggs, who was actually flying at that time. He was actually, you know, it was the Ryan Giggs of the pace and amazing trickery on the wing. And you know what? Rob Jones absolutely didn't give him a kick for 60 minutes until he ran out of puff, you know. You got to remember, he hardly trained with the team. Rob Jones was a fantastic fullback. And, you know, it was really, really close. I couldn't decide. I mean, you know, I thought maybe you'd decide for me, because that's how... this was the hardest decision I had.
Well, I don't know. Would you play Rob Jones on the right or the left?
See, that was an option as well. But I'm a big fan of balance. And, you know, I don't really want to talk about our current team at the moment. But I think we lack balance with no left-footer in our side. All our great teams of the past have had a left-footed player in there. At the moment, we don't have a left-footed player in our team, in our first 11, which is an indictment of, you know, where we are at the moment. There's no balance to our team. It's very, you know, it's lopsided. Therefore, that's why I refrain from playing Rob Jones at left-back. But I had to go with Marcus Babbel. Marcus Babbel is world class. We always throw that term away around, don't we? He's world class. X, Y, Z is world class. Marcus Babbel was the truly a world class player that we actually bought. I mean, I remember at the time thinking, surely Marcus Babbel won't leave Bayern Munich for us, because what had happened, if I remember, Bayern Munich had agreed with Real Madrid to sign him. Real Madrid had agreed a deal with Bayern. But what happened was Marcus Babbel had already promised his word to Liverpool, and that showed a sign, a calibre of the man as well. So he did actually come to us, even though they had agreed a deal with Real Madrid. And Marcus Babbel was just amazing for me. I'm really, really big Marcus Babbel fan.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I think it's coming out how big a fan I am of Marcus Babbel. But yeah, Marcus Babbel takes my right back slot.
That's really interesting. It shows how he had one season. He was absolutely phenomenal, and I suppose he didn't spring to my mind. But as soon as you start talking about the qualities of Marcus Babbel, of course, it comes back to me. I guess if I'd been pushed, I'd have been quite torn, really. Not so much Albiola, because I think he's very, very consistent. But I don't think he's that much of an upgrade on Steve Finnan. I think Steve Finnan, defensively, Albiola and Finnan are defensively about the same, but I think Steve Finnan offers more going forward. Mm-hmm. But
fantastic crosser of the ball, Steve Finnan.
Yeah,
I mean, could teach Klein a few things.
He could.
How to cross the ball.
I think for me it would be probably I would have gone for Finnan, but I'll give you Marcus Babbel. So if you're not playing Rob Jones on the right, then who you play and you want a left footer on the left? Let me guess, Aurelio.
Absolutely, for me personally, Aurelio was the most talented, alongside maybe Yaga, as a natural footballer of a defender. Stroke wing back, stroke. You know, Rafa actually even alluded to Aurelio's ball playing skills. He actually said, if I didn't have, I mean, Alonso and Sissoko and Gerrard at the time, he could actually play in midfield for me. Rafa actually raved about his passing skills. And, you know, it's quite funny. I mentioned to a friend the other day, I said, do you know these days where people are still missing Sacco's incisive passing to break the lines?
Mm.
Well, hey, they need to go and watch some of Aurelio's passing, because that's what you call breaking the lines from the back. And, you know, Aurelio, his free kicks, his brain, his intelligence, very much like Agar, nothing physically outstanding about him. Wasn't the tallest, wasn't the fastest, wasn't the biggest, yet very few wingers got better of him. Alas, just like Agar, injuries played a big role in him not fulfilling his potential for a consistent amount of time. But when Risa for me was brilliant shot, cracking shot. Risa, I wasn't his biggest fan. I mean, I know a lot of people would say Risa would push him. For me, the outstanding candidate was Aurelio. I was a big Aurelio fan.
That's interesting. I mean, it's such a shame, isn't it? A couple of the players that we've been selecting here, Daniel Agger, Aurelio, phenomenal talents. But unfortunately, the bodies just let them down, really, in the long run. I mean, Aurelio certainly more than Daniel Agger. Personally, I can't help but think about Stig Ingebjerneby as a left back. I mean, Stig, it was not the most talented of players. I was living in Norway in the late 80s, early 90s, and I had a soft spot for Stig Inge because I felt he never went missing. He naturally left footed. I think the fact that if he'd been Brazilian or if he'd been, you know, continental European rather than a Norwegian, and the name Stig, I suppose that it had some...
Oh, the stereotypical boring Scandinavian.
Yeah, but he's a fantastic guy.
If you're talking about quality, we were referring to Steve Finnan's quality of crossing. Stig Bjørneby actually beats him in terms of actual final product.
Yeah,
his quality. Do you remember the most famous, probably, or the most I can remember? I recall his cross for the Ruddock equaliser against Man United.
Yeah,
when we were 3-0 down, and a tremendous ball in for Ruddock to score the equaliser. I mean, that was just fantastic cross. I mean, his primary. For me, his primary asset was his final ball delivery, was his crossing.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he took a lot of free kicks and corners. I think he's. Yeah. We could do with a player who can take a corner as well as Stegen. Yeah, certainly we could do with that on the side. But I think Aurelio is a pretty good choice to go. He's certainly a phenomenally talented player. The good thing about Stegen was also that he was an incredibly fit footballer. I mean, he suffered a broken leg. It would have been about 94, 95. I was living in Copenhagen. That's how I remember it, because I remember listening to the match. But he was, I know a lot of fans would look back at him and think, oh, well, you know, he was nothing special. But I mean, Steve Finnan wasn't a player who was special, but these players brought things to the side that consistency, quality, tenacity.
Absolutely.
Exactly. But Aurelio, we can go with now. Grizz, I'm very, very, very interested in your midfield. Given that, you know, midfields are always going to help you win or lose games.
Absolutely. Well, this is where it gets tough. I mean, it's the irony is the back four actually sort of, there was not much argument or debate. You know, it's quite indicative of how maybe we haven't had much quality in those defensive and goalkeeping situations, roles. But this is where we have had strength in the past, 10, 15 years since the Premiership started. And this is where it got tricky. If we were to play the 4-2-3-1 that I suggested I would, ideally I wanted a combination of midfielder. I wanted to go with what we are lacking massively right now, which is an out-and-out DM of the old school type, a natural defensive midfielder. None of this ball-playing, deep-lying playmaker, no. I wanted an out-and-out defensive midfielder. And the options that sort of came to mind were Dietmar Hamann, a German international, for me, an elegant player. A very, very good reader of the game. You know, similar to actually in terms of people would criticize his range of passing, similar to how some people criticize Henderson's range of passing. But what Hamann lacked in vision maybe of the forward pass, he made up for his in terms of tackling, his reading of the game. And again, another natural leader. I think, you know, his probably the most famous game we can remember of Hamann changing the way a game was going was the Champions League final in Istanbul, of course, when he comes on at halftime and totally nullifies Kaká for the rest of the game. It was tough out of Dietmar Hamann and Mascherano, but in the end I went with Mascherano because he is one player that we have not replaced ever since he left. The guy is an absolute ball-winning machine. You know, he is the equivalent of the Kante now. But actually, I actually thought Mascherano's passing was very underrated. He did hit the pass with pace. He wasn't one of these sideways passers all the time. And I suppose, you know, his adaptability, as we've seen now, to sometimes be able to play at the back as well. I know,
that's it. I mean, if we're going with Daniel Agger as one of the centre-backs, having Mascherano in the DM role. Yeah, exactly. Or if Agger's not fit, slipping back into, slotting back into the defence. That's an interesting choice. I would have come down to the same. If I was going with a defensive midfielder, an out-and-out defensive midfielder, I would have come down to Didier Hamann and Mascherano. I saw both of them play. Both phenomenal talents. I would love to have both of them in the squad today. Because
I would love to have both of them in my team, to be honest with you. For away games, I was actually thinking, you know, this would be a home game against Man United at home, you know, type game if it was a one-off game. But for me, in away games, I would have gone with Mascherano and Hamann in midfield. And you know what, John? We would have the best defensive record in the Premiership. I can safely say that.
Well, I think, you know, in recent months or since Christmas, you know, we've been hit for goals by Swansea, Jamie Vardy, Leicester tonight. We've been hit when we've been pushing forward, and I think the kind of footballer that Mascherano is exactly what Liverpool need. Going on the Gegenpress, going forward, pushing, trying to hit teams when they lose possession, but being so far up and leaving so much open at the back that, I mean, Mascherano was phenomenal at getting back and playing interception, absolutely, breaking up the play. I mean, I felt a little bit sorry for Lucas tonight because, for the first goal, there's a lot of people saying on Twitter that, you know, he's got no pace. He was exposed because there was no midfield support, and a Mascherano there, a Didi Haman there, would never have allowed the ball to get up to as far as where, you know, Vardy gets the ball. Haman, Mascherano would have both, I'm sure. And even Lucas in his day as a midfielder in the season that he was at his very best, the season that he gets injured against Chelsea, would have been able to control. I'm interested, Chris, do you really think, because, you know, we're guys in our 40s and we believe in defensive midfielders, it seems. So many of the squads in the Premier League at the moment aren't playing defend DMs. Do we really need one in football today, do you think?
The best way to look at this kind of thing, or sort of analyse it from afar, is you just go through teams that are current title holders of titles, aren't they? So we look at Leicester City, who won the title. Their DM was Kante. We look at Chelsea under Mourinho. They had Makalele. The formidable Arsenal team had a Petit or Vieira. Reckon all the great teams that we've seen in the last few years or recent times have had a DM. Excuse me. I can't think of a great team that hasn't got one. So I'm just going to get some water. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, no problem.
I mean, even the great Barca team, probably one of the greatest DMs that we are actually seeing in Sergio Busquets. Every great team has a defensive midfielder that enables the rest of the team to function fluidly, and also when being counter-attacked is there to pick up the pieces, as you said, and stop any counter right in its tracks. I think it's absolutely crucial, absolutely crucial.
So who else would you have in your midfield then, if you're playing Mascherano in defensive midfield?
Well, if I'm going with Mascherano in midfield, then a ball-playing midfielder has to go alongside him. Now, this was tough, John. This was tough as well. Another tough, tough position. Because there was a few candidates that came to mind. And the three that I came to mind were... excuse me. Gary Mack, who I thought was very, very... a very shrewd signing at the time. Stevie G, of course, and of course Alonso. Obviously, all three of them have their different skill sets. All three of them are very, very adaptable in how. I'd say McAllister and Stevie were very adaptable in the positions they could play. McAllister could obviously play in his heyday as an attacking mid as well. But I think I went for Alonso, because I think the partnership with Mascherano would have just been absolutely perfect. Sorry, John, I'll let you just carry on for a little while. I'm just going to have
All right. It's okay. I can just edit it out. Don't stress. Just take your time and have some water.
I've actually been on antibiotics for the last few days.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it.
And I thought this was the best of it. The worst of it. Sorry, it's over.
Don't stress, just take them out. I was just reading the quotes from Jürgen Klopp this evening.
I can't wait to actually read watch his presser afterwards.
Yeah, dreadful. Okay.
All right, sorry.
No problems. Let me pick it up here. So I'm interested by your choice here with Mascherano and Alonso. I take it you're going with Alonso, yeah?
I went with Alonso because of the rest of the formation that, you know, we will sort of reveal later. I mean, it was very close between, in the end, Alonso or Steven Gerrard to play that particular role alongside Mascherano.
Really?
But I actually went with I went with Alonso in the end.
I'm going to say no. That really surprises me. I have to say, because I just think that was so not Gerrard's best position.
Well, this is it. This is why I opted to play Gerrard in a different position.
I'm going to say you're going to have to tell us where you're playing Stevie G.
Well, Stevie G. So I went with Mascherano and Alonso in the centre midfield. They're your two defensive midfielders. Sorry, defensive midfielder and a deep lying playmaker that actually is like a quarterback, starts your moves. And we all know the legendary passing skills of Alonso. So therefore, I wanted three attacking mids, three players that play behind the one striker. Steven Gerrard, you know, debates will go on forever and ever. For me personally, in my lifetime, without a shadow of a doubt, he's the best LFC player I've ever seen. Stevie G would have been my captain. Stevie G would have, for me personally, could have played in any of those positions better than most of those players. That's how highly I rated him on a personal level. But I opted for Stevie G to play sort of... I've got to tell you the other midfielder alongside him, because then it would make more sense. Stevie G could play on the right. I think his most successful period in terms of stats was when he was playing off the right. Am I right? Would you know
about
that?
Yeah, that's right. It is. He gets the most goals as well.
Yeah. So, but then... his partnership with Torres was probably one of the best partnerships we've had since Aldridge and Beardsley, you know, Dalglish and etc. So I was torn. Where do I play Stevie G? I opted to play Stevie from the right because of what I said in terms of his stats for that season where he played off the right, where Rafa converted him into this inside right forward almost, but he could also switch to the left. So Stevie G took up my right wing role. You've got to remember, this is a Premiership 11, and we've got to pick players that sort of were in their peak in these years. I mean, even though the legend that is John Barnes did actually play for us in that period, it's difficult to pick him because obviously his powers had sort of slightly diminished by.
Yeah, by, I mean, and he's playing more in the Alonso role here that
well,
we've picked.
There you go. He could have actually played in that Alonso role. He is one of the options that, you know, did come to mind. But I actually went for the other role to be taken, the other winger stroke wide forward role, interchangeable with Stevie G, Steve McManaman. Steve McManaman, at the time, to be honest with you, at the time I didn't realize how good he was. He's one of those players that you kind of sort of realize how good he was when he actually wasn't there. He actually, I think, improved even as a player when he went to Madrid, showed me how clever he was because I think he adapted his role at Madrid, didn't he? He suddenly wasn't this winger stroke forward. He actually became an integral part of their link-up play, creative play. I think, who was the manager that converted him? Was it Del Bosque? I think Del Bosque at Madrid actually converted him very similarly to how Klopp has converted Adam Lallana into this central attacking role. I remember Madrid coming to Man United with the famous Cristiano Ronaldo, the original Brazilian Ronaldo, and tearing United to bits, and Steve McManaman playing an absolute integral role. And that's when I realised how good this guy actually is. So the three I chose in midfield as my attacking midfielders was Stevie G and Steve McManaman. I'll leave the two others afterwards.
I think that's a good choice. I think if we're playing Gerrard on the right, the McManaman, who was also very, very strong down the right, although he tended to get a free role. As I said in the In Focus pod that focused on Steve McManaman, his reputation is perhaps tainted a bit by the manner in which he left. But if you're of our age and remember McManaman, you remember him as he was so integral to the club. I think he had a lot of pressure on him because of the role he played. The tactic seemed to be get the ball to Macca and let's see what he can do.
Would you say is very similar to how Chelsea play with Eden Hazard now, as Eden Hazard is their go-to guy in terms of give him the ball. Steve McManaman was our go-to guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Although I'd say the difference between Eden Hazard, I think Eden Hazard is more technical, has more to his game as a striking option. McManaman didn't score enough goals for us. I mean, he scored some absolute blinders. The goal against Celtic really stands out for me.
Absolutely, from the halfway line, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. But there is a similarity there. But it's always going to be difficult where one chooses to play Gerrard. Do you feel that by having McManaman and Gerrard, though, you'd there'd be too much on the right, or would you see them interchanging, having the freedom to go elsewhere?
Well, naturally, I mean, I don't want to sound too much of a hypocrite here. I mean, because earlier I was talking about balance, and I would naturally like a left footer to play on the left as opposed to Steven Gerrard going to the left or McManaman cutting in. I mean, you've got to remember the fullbacks that we've picked in this team were amazing attacking fullbacks in Marcus Babbel and Fabio Aurelio. So therefore, our width would naturally come from our fullbacks. I mean, the only player that came to mind in terms of naturally left-footed was Harry Kewell, but he actually just did it. I don't know, for whatever reason, injuries or whatever it was, personal life, it just didn't click for him at Liverpool, did it?
No.
I mean, the Harry Kewell at Leeds was a phenomenal player. I mean, probably one of the most gifted naturally left-footed players, you know, athletes, wasn't he?
Oh, he's phenomenal. But
by the time he came to us, I don't know what happened. I would have loved to pick, you know, obviously a peak John Barnes. That's his position. That's John Barnes. No one else. There's no point talking about any other candidate.
No, but exactly. One of the all-time greats.
But unfortunately, John Barnes wasn't playing that role when the Premiership started. So there wasn't much option. Luis Garcia came into thought. Very inconsistent. Again, you know, very much the modern day Lallana, in terms of, you know, we always wanted more from Garcia.
Mm.
The glimpses that he showed us were like, come on, Luis, you can. This is amazing.
Scored some great goals, but not. And he was. I mean,
to deceive.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you say?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I have some very fond memories of him. He scores some great goals, but if I'm picking a side to go and win the Premier League, the holiest of holy grails, I don't think Garcia is going to be in my 11. But you've got Gerrard and you've got McManaman. What about on the left side? You've got because if you're playing, what did you say? You're playing 4-2.
Well, I'm playing 4-2-3-1, but I was going to play Gerrard. And McManaman as alternating wide men. You know, Jerry McManaman can play on either. The guy that I was going to play in the position behind the front man would naturally always plays on the left as well. Drifts to the left. I don't know if I'm giving too much away, but this is where it got really, really tough. Now we've got two players to fill. Two positions to fill with three players, and I really, you know, couldn't decide. Maybe you can help me here. The three players that I wanted to somehow fit into this system, into this team, were Suarez, Fowler, and Torres. So this is the dilemma I had. I mean, you got to remember, we're missing out Michael Owen, who was a fantastic, fantastic goal scorer for us. Daniel Sturridge, who's, you know, goal scoring feats are sort of still, we still talk about them in this current day. But for me, we start with Robbie Fowler, who for me was the best natural finisher I've ever seen in my life. I had the pleasure of seeing Robbie Fowler on a few occasions live. And for me, he was absolutely beautiful to watch. Robbie Fowler could score left foot, right foot, the chip over the keeper, the blast into the corner. Every type of goal a forward can score, he could score that. You know, I don't know what your view is on Robbie Fowler, but I thought, you know, for me, the most naturally gifted English number nine of recent times.
Oh yeah, Robbie will be one of my top three Liverpool players. Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Say it every time I mention him. You want to come on the show, Robbie, let me know.
We are agreeing on a lot here, John. Bloody hell, I didn't expect that.
Well, it's kind of interesting that you're going for the three that you've got here.
This is it. I mean, saying all that, I've given him the most brilliant intro, and you know, I actually in the end had to leave him out because the formation that I went for, I wanted the most durable, a brute and a goal scorer all rolled into one as my number one striker that's going to play up front on his own. And that had to be Fernando Torres. I mean, Torres, for me, wasn't as talented as Robbie Fowler. For me, wasn't as instinctive a goal scorer as Robbie Fowler. But my God, he was ruthless and determined to get that goal. In that season, the couple of seasons that he played for us, in that season, he was actually at times unplayable. The season where we finished second, wasn't it, under with Rafa, where he played along with Stevie just behind him. I actually initially picked Fowler, but then when I looked at the formation of the team, and this is where I thought, you know, I've got to give in and pick Torres as my main striker, the number one, the number nine that plays through the middle. Unfortunately, in my opinion, I left Fowler out because the other guy, Luis Suarez, just comes into the team, doesn't he? He absolutely comes into the team. And therefore, that's why I sort of left that left forward role sort of very vague. The three would be very interchangeable. Suarez, Stevie and McManaman would be very, very interchangeable behind Fernando, in my opinion. So therefore, they wouldn't have a set fixed role.
It's interesting because I think you've got the tenacity there in Suarez. I mean, Suarez is phenomenally tenacious. You've got the tenacity in Stevie G, capable of making great tackles, capable, very, very capable defensively, higher up the pitch. I didn't think he was ever that good defensively when he played at the base of the midfield. McManaman, a leader, we've talked about leaders, so incredibly creative. Although I think Suarez, for me, is better coming in off the right. I think the tendency is that we've got three players here coming who are all better coming from the right. I certainly think that Suarez and Gerrard can do jobs down the middle, and I certainly think that Stevie G is, if I'd probably err on having McManaman more on the right. But listening to you here, I don't know, part of me wants to be devil's advocate and drop Steven Gerrard.
From the team?
Yeah, well, from our starting 11 here. No, I mean, I don't know if I'd have... I don't know, because I'm just thinking... I'm thinking about the overall impact here, because I think if I've got Mascherano and Alonso at the base, you know, that we've got the defender and we've got the creativity there spraying the ball around. If I've got Mascherano doing the dirty work, Alonso playing absolute quality balls out to McManaman, who's got pace, guile, absolute leadership, tenacity, didn't give away the odd dodgy, you know, penalties like or tackles, didn't get himself sent off as much. I could see a player like McManaman really doing some serious damage down the right. Suarez would give me the tenacity playing through the middle there. And I would be very, very tempted to play instead. So I'd have McManaman on the right. I'd have Suarez through the middle. And on the left, I would either have Coutinho. I'd either have Coutinho or Berger. Because Berger's a natural left footer. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal attacking footballer. Very aggressive. Big. I mean, he's what, 1 meter, 89, 90. And I think the potential link up play of someone like Berger and Suarez is mouth watering. And it's not, and I'm not saying that Berger is a better player than Stevie G. I'm just saying with the system, with the kind of players that I would like to see, it might be a possibility. And then the other option there for me would be Coutinho, because I think Coutinho, the great thing about Gerrard and Torres is, and I think Torres on his day is my striker too. And I just love some of the goals. Robbie, my heart's with Robbie. But I think with the system that we've gone for,
we go with the head.
Yeah, exactly. We need someone that's got the pace and is also a great goal scorer. And I think Owen and Torres could do a very, very similar job. But I think that Torres has got more physicality than Owen. Comes down to size for me. And I think Coutinho, if you take Gerrard out, you've got McManaman from the right or Coutinho from the left can play phenomenal balls for Torres to run onto. And I think with the tenacity of Suarez, the tackling ability of Suarez, the creativity of Suarez, then you could cover not having Gerrard. I think in terms of leadership, you've still got a whole abundance of leaders on the pitch. The only thing I would feel though without Gerrard is that you haven't got a natural penalty taker.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that you've actually thrown another name or option and sort of explained how maybe we need a naturally left-sided attacker. And it's interesting because and this is no lie, this is actually true. I actually thought the same thing as you just said. But where we differ, I actually did think of bringing Coutinho on the left. I would suggest, or I would offer you a swap then, in that case, because I can't think of an LFC team without a Steven Gerrard in it. I just can't. I can't comprehend the thought. I couldn't live with myself picking a Liverpool team without a Stevie G in it. One of the options that I played with in terms of bringing a more left-sided, naturally left-sided player into the team, i.e. a Berger or a Coutinho, was if we have Mascherano as the DM, then we could play Gerrard alongside Alonso. Thoughts?
Oh. Yeah.
Because in my book, Stevie G was of equal caliber in terms of passing. I think he was very underrated. I think everyone looked at the robust, this powerful athlete that Stevie G was. But his passing was, when required, was absolutely immaculate as well.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. I mean, look, based on recent performances, I try any of these guys on their day. Yeah. They all had difficulties. Well, listen, Chris, we've been going for just about an hour here, and In Focus tries to be a little bit shorter. So we've offered lots of possibilities, lots of solutions, and we've provoked a little bit towards the end here. My final question to you, Chris, is given the 11 that we've come up with, and if we just to recap, so in goal you've got Pepe Reina, you've got Marcus Babbel right back, you've got Sami Hyypiä, Daniel Agger in the center, and then you've got Aurelio on the left back. In midfield, at the base of the midfield, you've got Javier Mascherano with Alonso alongside him. You've got the three ahead of those as McManaman, Gerrard, and Suarez, and Torres up front. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
It's a mouth-watering sight. Now here's the really, really tricky question for you, Grizz, and I haven't told you about this one. So you've got that side, and assuming that they're all playing at their best and they're going to stay fit for the whole season, you know, we might as well have our pipe dreams. Which Premier League manager, including Jurgen Klopp, from Roy Evans, from the Premier League era, which of our managers are you going to pick to manage that side to get us the title?
I went with Rafael Benitez. The reason why I opted Benitez just over Jurgen was, in my opinion, this team... See, Jurgen is probably the best motivational manager this team could have had. But I think the team that we've picked, with the amount of natural leaders, I don't think it would have needed that type of manager. This team needed a mastermind, a tactical brain, just like we've discussed, or we've sort of tried to work out how the three behind the one would work out.
Yeah.
Well, that would be Mr. Benitez's job. Grizz and John Bosco wouldn't have to worry about that, because Rafael Benitez would have them working in such a formation, set it up so brilliantly that this team, without a shadow of doubt, would win us this Premier League. I mean, for me, Rafael Benitez was probably one of the most tactical managers I've ever seen. I mean, he was brilliant. Yes, people criticize his man management skills, etc., etc., but as a coach and as a tactician, second to none. So I think just tips it in term over Jurgen Klopp, who's for me is more of a motivational, inspirational type manager. You know, with the amount of leaders that we had in that team, I think Rafael Benitez would be the perfect coach.
That's really interesting. It's because I was just running through my head. I absolutely, without a doubt, Rafa would be my choice. Tactician, could basically tactic his way out of a closed box. Absolutely fantastic. Love the guy to bits. Love his brain. And I was thinking, I was going through the Liverpool managers, and I was thinking, well, Julia, I have a huge amount of respect for Julia. I wouldn't pick Evans. Julia, on his day, on a confident day, I think Julier could get a lot out of this side, but for me, this side, it has too much. It's got really solid defensively. You've got Marcus Babbel, you've got Sami Hyypiä. I think the fact that we've gone with Daniel Agger, I don't think Julier would have got anything out of Daniel Agger. He preferred the Carras of this world. He was a pragmatist.
Definitely.
I think Julier would have really enjoyed someone like Mascherano. I think he would have given Liverpool stability, and he would have allowed Liverpool to counter-attack as well. I think Xabi Alonso would also have been a Julier player, because he's creative, a very, very... underrated in terms of his physicality and fierceness. The thing I always noticed with Xabi is that if someone sort of, you know, fouled him, hacked him, did something that Alonso didn't like, he would get his revenge, but he would always make sure that the referee wasn't anywhere near him when it happened. He was an absolutely fantastic guy for that. But I think that Julier, his instinct was too defensive. So I wouldn't go. Roy Hodgson, I don't include at all. And Brendan Rodgers, I wouldn't pick, because I just don't think, I think Rodgers, he didn't have enough defensive nous. And
no, I think Rodgers was, I hate to say that, but I think Rodgers would be overruled by those players, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Those, you know, he's not of their caliber, I don't think, in my opinion.
Yeah. And actually, and Hodgson, of course, I disregard. So that leaves me Kenny and Jurgen Klopp. And I would take Kenny ahead, even Kenny in his second stage, than Jurgen Klopp, because, well, Kenny Dalglish was a winner. He'd seen it all. The first, when Dalglish replaces, Hodgson, we play some phenomenal football. We're also very, very good defensively. Dalglish is also an incredibly good man manager. Look how Lucas Leiva, who was just the guest on the Anfield Wrap on the tour player there, was talking about how Dalglish really, really made him feel that he could do anything, really bigged him up. And I think Dalglish, he gets us to two finals. We win the League Cup. We don't win the Premier. We don't win the FA Cup, and we don't do very well in the league. And he gets jettisoned by FSG. I truly believe that if Dalglish had been given another season, we would have seen good stuff from Dalglish again. And I think what I've seen in Dalglish that I am yet to see in Jurgen Klopp is a tactical intelligence when things are going against us. Under Jurgen Klopp, we are phenomenal when we're in ascendancy. Dortmund is the exception. When we pull out the victory at Anfield with Dortmund, that's the exception. But at other times thus far, and don't get me wrong, I back Jurgen Klopp. I'm sure he will take us close to the Premier League during his tenure. I think we've got great things under him. But given that you've just given me an absolutely mouth-watering squad, if I can't have Rafa Benitez to manage it, I'm going with Kenny Dalglish. What do you got to say about that, Grizz?
I'm nodding away in absolute total agreement with everything you've said. You know, all the managers that you've mentioned, all their deficiencies, all the positives about them as well, I totally agree with. Kenny, I did forget Kenny. I can't believe it. But there you go. See, I told you sometimes, you know, things. Yeah, exactly. Things slip your mind. Kenny, for me, was an inspirational figure. He commands respect. You know, as we talked about, is the total opposite of, what's his name? Rodgers. I totally forgot his name. Brendan Rodgers. Totally opposite of Brendan Rodgers, where Brendan Rodgers was me and me. Kenny was LFC, LFC and LFC. All he cared about was the club, the team comes first, how much sacrifice he put in, you know, the trauma, the tragedies that he went through and seen through. And the main thing is, you could be the best players in the world, and we have in that team that we've selected some of the finest players in the world. Yet, if Kenny still walks through that door, "Hi guys, I'm your coach," they will still be overawed. They would still stand up to attention, and that's an amazing, amazing trait to have. But equally, Mr. Benitez would have the same. I mean, the thing that tips it for me in that case would be Rafael Benitez's European experience. Shall we go with that, John? Because yeah. I think on a European level, you know, Kenny was slightly not in the same, let's say, you know, in terms of his knowledge of the European game. So we've got to remember, we want to win not only the Premier League, but we want to win the Champions League. So therefore, you know, that's the only reason I'd go for lean towards Rafael Benitez.
So thank you very much there to Grizz for coming on the show. Any comments, questions or feedback for Grizz, just reach out to him at Grizz Khan on Twitter, GRIZZKHAN. And of course, if you've got any comments or feedback, questions, observations, thoughts or whatever, just reach out to me on Twitter at John Buscal, JONBUSCALL. Remember, if you enjoy In Focus, do tell your fellow Reds on social media all about the show. I'd love to get more listeners. And of course, just send them along to AnfieldIndex.com, where, as well as links to this show, you'll find links to all the great podcasts that Gags and Nina and the rest of the AI team put out. Well, I should be back with another episode, another guest, another topic in focus very soon. In the meantime, thanks very much for listening.
Liverpool in Focus. One topic, one guest, every week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.